country. And Dallas now will continue on side two of broadcast number 649, May the 14th, 1984. There is a lawsuit going on in Washington, D.C. to turn over information on the Carter Gate papers. The election is coming up, and a lawsuit has been filed before the judge, before Judge Harold Green, to get a special prosecutor to go into how papers were stolen that made it possible Ronald Reagan to be briefed on subjects he didn't know from the National Security Council, from the CIA. How did he get the information? He literally had it stolen for him, and it went to Edwin Meese and William Casey and Robert Gray and a whole group of other people. Now, this lawsuit has been filed, and the Justice Department, William French Smith, says you can't have a special prosecutor unless I appoint him, and I won't appoint him. And the lawsuit is put on by Professor John Banzhaf, B-A-N-Z-H-A-F the third, who says to Judge Green, you can't let the Attorney General decide whether or not to prosecute this case or investigate this case, that the ethics law was set up after Watergate, a 1978 ethics law that was set up that if the Justice Department, because of conflicts of interest, because the Attorney General is always the best friend of the president, if the ethics law can't be obeyed by the Attorney General, then a special prosecutor has to be brought in. And the Attorney General, William French Smith, says, I don't want a prosecutor. I looked into it and there's no reason. And yet the documents exist to prove that he's lying. And this is a very simple but a very complicated question of getting this into a court of law. There's a story in the Washington Post. There's several good articles. One in the Oregonian that a very fine friend sends me, and I never get a chance to write and thank these people. I get these large envelopes of articles. The U.S. fights the suit to name Carter's paper proper. That's the way it's written, a little complicated. The Justice Department asked the judge to dismiss this lawsuit, asking for a special prosecutor. On February the 29th, Justice Green rejected the Justice Department a motion to dismiss the suit. They said that it appears that they have simply ignored the Ethics in Government Act, William French Smith has, and that the Justice Department says the decision to have the prosecutor belongs not under the Ethics Act, but the Attorney General. You get this. I hope it isn't too complicated. Let me just explain once again. There is massive evidence that every agency, practically the government, was briefing and helping Ronald Reagan know the answers, not only for the one-night debate, but through the whole election campaign. Pilfered papers were grooming this actor from Hollywood, this buffoon, this high society, to answer the right questions. And the names of the people involved are available. And it took 8 months of investigation that the Justice Department was obligated to say, okay, it's obvious I, William French Smith, the attorney of the president, his personal attorney, now your attorney general, I can't handle it. We have to have a prosecutor. He said there's no need for it. And the law professor from Washington University Law says, yes, there is a need, so that this investigation is going round and round. They've asked Jacob Stein, the special prosecutor appointed to investigate Edwin Meese, to go into the area of Meese's role in the stolen papers. Now, if the Attorney General says there wasn't anything, is it right for Stein to say there is no evidence, or does the special prosecutor come on? And the Justice Department says, if we don't do it, you can't have it. The Washington Post has a story, the post-Watergate law sets up a procedure leading to the appointment of an independent counsel or special prosecutor. But without invoking the provisions of the act, the Justice Department just said, no, you don't need it, and I'm not going into it. The New York Times has a very good story, April 28th, on the problem going round and around about the ethics law that demands, in the case of blatant irregularities, blatant breaking of the law, that the Attorney General appointed, if he doesn't want to, the Justice Department says, then you can't have it. And this is, we're warming up. This is June, and the election's in November. The guy stole the last election. And his attorney general, who wants to run home, isn't going to do anything about it. Now, there was a story in the Washington Times, jumping from that to Henry Kissinger. And in the article, it says that Henry Kissinger said, as a result of misinformed public opinion, Henry Kissinger will not accept any future assignments because of harassment and threats he faces during public appearances. Henry Kissinger is not appearing in public. I wish I could have gotten up to San Jose. I wrote those brochures or the sheets on Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer. Tell us about your mentor. Was he Hitler's number 33 prisoner at Dachau? I wish I could have been at one of the last public appearances that Henry Kissinger was going to. He canceled his speech in Florida. He's a paper tiger. When you hit the truth, I bet the Kramer-Kissinger thing hurts him worse than anything. He canceled a speech he was to give down in Florida. He appeared in Houston, and there were demonstrations. He appeared in San Francisco, and they had to call out the police. There were so many demonstrators, about 200 people, and mass arrests. You notice how that's been hushed up. I'm waiting to see who was arrested so I can contact them with the Fritz Kramer information. That's hushed up. Then he canceled Tufts University with former heads of states. Now here is an article, April 18, 1984. He's not making any more public appearances. Good riddance, Herr Kissinger. Let's keep after you until you're not seen anywhere, until you're just laid out or hung up by Mussolini. Now, a few quick items, and then I'm going on to J. Paul and the Los Angeles Police Department, which I think is one of the most important stories, ongoing stories, and has been for the last year and a half. One-inch story in the San Francisco Chronicle this week. If you don't have a microscope or magnifying glass, you may be missing this. Mises aide quits. One sentence. James G. Jenkins, deputy to the White House counselor, Edwin Meese, will leave his post on Tuesday to become executive vice president of Transworld Group Limited, an export-import company, and chairman of the Transworld Engineering and Construction Service, period. Export-import is the CIA and Defense Department. It doesn't say what city. He's leaving. The rat is leaving the sinking ship. James Jenkins' name comes into a lot of papers about the selling of the Meese house, the arrangements and the financial arrangements of Edwin Meese, and the scandals that the special prosecutor is investigating. When the Los Angeles Police Department story broke and the lawsuit by the Civil Liberties Union against their illegal spying, a whole hunk of team of the Public Disorder Information Division retired, and you always see the retired captain of the police testify this, and retired Captain Loomis did this, and retired captain, he went somewhere else. They got off the ship and had to leave to be former people so that when the court of law was started to function, they wouldn't be called. And then the police had to settle out of court for almost $2 million instead of letting it go to court. I talked about the murder, I think the murder of certain actors and producers last week, and I'm just going to mention one death, two deaths this week to update you. One is Bob Moretti, who was buried today. The ex-assembly speaker in California, a close friend of Willie Brown, he suffered a fatal heart attack. He was all of 47 years old playing tennis, but he had an earlier heart attack earlier in the year, and at 47, he was out. For several years when Ronald Reagan was president, he fought him tooth and nail from 1971 to 74. He was right there fighting him on Medicare problems, welfare reforms, on education for the people who couldn't afford it. He was a fighter, and he was knocked out, a heart condition, and he kept Ronald Reagan at least some position, sparring with him, so Reagan couldn't become the total parafascist state that I've described in the book, California, the first parafascist state. Well, Bob Moretti died this week. If the Democrats surface again, you'll have one less person who defended your rights with your Medicare and your various privileges or your education or for your children and grandchildren. And another controversial person who died this week, another one-sentence article from the LA Times, get out again, the old magnifying glass or the microscope, bystander who subdued Hinckley dies. Now dig this, this is from Reuters News Service, not the Associated Press, not the United Press in America, Cleveland, from Cleveland, Ohio, Alfred Antonucci, that very controversial person, 71 years old, who subdued and held John Hinckley Jr. After he attempted the assassination of Reagan, he held his hand down. He died of a heart ailment in Cleveland, Ohio, and he was very controversial. The government harassed him. They bugged him. They got him out of a labor union. I'll do more on the role that he had. He just happened to put Hinckley's hand down, and I guess the powers that be didn't like it. So they punished him instead of helping him. And so this fellow died, and it seems to me that's an American news story. It would make a little more than just the Reuters, but maybe you'll find in your other papers, too. All I saw is May the 11th, 1984, bystander who subdued Hinckley. If he didn't subdue Hinckley, we'd have Alexander Hagen, George Bush. So you can see that the powers that be, we'd have our CIA director, Bush, who worked with over Bobby Inman and the whole Task Force 157 and the real terror network of the United States. Nobody appreciated the fact that he stopped Hinckley, so therefore he had to suffer. Quick story from Minneapolis. Flunking kindergartners, 11% of the children in Minnesota fail to go to first grade. Kindergartners are flunked. 11% can't meet Minnesota standards. They have to go to summer school. We'll do more on that later, but just a comment about America. And Mark Rich, the fellow who bought a 50% of Pebble Beach and 20th Century Fox with Marvin Davis. New York Times has a story this week. A lawyer for the Swiss government appeared before the United States Court of Appeals to urge the end of the $50,000 fine Mark Rich is paying. He took out of this country at least, there's a variance of $48 million to $100 million in taxes. And instead of coming to the United States and coughing up what happened and paying $48 million to the United States taxes, because we could use that money for rapid transit, clean air, environmental protection, he's paid $15.3 million in fines since June 29 of 1983. It is total insanity. Almost every article I'm reading is total insanity. It's hard to describe, whether it's entering kindergarten or being willing to pay $15 million since June on a $48 million tax fine. Why not come home and just pay it? It's crazy. Now to the Los Angeles Police Department. I was going to do an entire hour on it, but because the Olympics and the Soviet Union charges, but I'm just going to briefly mention three articles because I have a filing cabinet in chronological order of major stories of the Los Angeles Police Department to share with you. Because the LAPD is piped into computers outside of the city that go to homes and offices in Alexander, Virginia, to John Reese. And I do want to do a lot more on John Reese for you and share that information of who it goes to. I want to update this for you. It's like Mae Bressel reading mystery stories or movies or books. I like to know the punchline, so I'm going to tell you the punchline before I get to the part about J. Paul. The punchline was that after a trial was going on all this year that cost the city of Los Angeles almost $2 million, that the settlement out of court, the leaking of J. Paul's computer to the Western Goals, to Larry McDonald, the trial of the police commission was over. Three members of the police board had a hearing for the last 3 months to decide if J. Paul did anything illegal. He was charged for nine counts of misconduct, never mentioned his wife or the board of Western Goals, as I said before. But this is the way the Los Angeles Herald has the headlines in like 1 inches of black ink. J. Paul suspended as superiors blamed. You would translate that to mean that he was taken off the police force and that the people over him were blamed for his being removed. But then you get to the fine print. He was suspended for 10 days, but can be hired almost immediately. This is verbatim. He's to be given his $12,000 money of salary that he wasn't earning for the hearing since January. And eight of the nine counts of improper behavior were dropped against him. It didn't matter that John Reese, that sleazy animal from Western Goals, that even J. Edgar Hoover said you shouldn't trust in his reports. What was going on, I've described on this air, on the air week after week. But this hearing was over. He was suspended for 10 days. As I say, can be restated immediately. Paid his $12,000. Eight of the nine charges gone. L.A. Police Chief Daryl Gates had the nerve in the interview to say, in quotes, justice has been done. The police investigated themselves. Three policemen, not a court of law. They had papers that were ordered destroyed in 1975 that have gone. Now they can go to Bobby Inman's computer and down to Dallas and down to the home of the international computers at Austin and in Dallas. And that's why it was so important. If you leave this country or enter it, they have all this information going back to the 60s and 70s, and it is sealed and just transferred out. He was exonerated by the Los Angeles Police Department, the Board of Rights, the three-member hearing. It didn't matter that they shared the database with Western Goals. He was only found guilty of providing John Reese with Los Angeles Police intelligence data for one day in March. One day in March, he compiled dossiers on the police commission, on politicians, on judges, on activists. Another story, besides the one being blamed, that was the Herald, was the Los Angeles Times. And this headline, of course, reads, Paul guilty of one count in police spying case. And then this goes into the very simple charges that he got for this particular article. I outlined each of those articles. One lousy count he was charged with for these proceedings. And five or six of his superiors knew of the computerized data. That comes in the other article, and it came out through the other articles. Captain Robert Loomis, who retired, moved to Nevada, and he was in charge of the bomb squad, the nuclear bases, the nuclear bombs. He lives in Nevada. Captain John Cleghorn, I've mentioned him before, went on from J. Paul's terrorist division, along with them, to be in charge of the anti-terrorist division, where the Olympic Games and terrorism will be secure from J. Paul's team. Cleghorn is the commander. Lieutenant Thomas Scheidecker, who took the papers home, who I've talked about, linked to Navy intelligence, and the CIA is back at the police department working with the networks up and down to the Office of Emergency Service and throughout the state of California and into Navy intelligence around the world. Lieutenant Elmer Schiller, S-C-H-I-L-L-E-R, is in the anti-terrorist division in charge of Olympic security. These are the people that worked with a computerized data bag that went from the Los Angeles Police Department and the files going back to the 60s and 70s to J. Paul, that goes to Virginia, and then to Bobby Inman, because Edward Teller and Mr. Stinlab and the Steinholz and the whole gang worked directly with Henry Kissinger and Bobby Inman, and then they go down to Houston and Austin and the University of Texas and Dallas. That's, I'll make this full circle until you really see it. And that is the, and then Lieutenant Detective Charles Russell knew, and then Lieutenant Gus Drulis, D-R-U-L-I-S, of the Terror Division. Three men of the Terrorist Division in charge of the Olympic security. And here's Daryl Gates, I mentioned on the first half of this broadcast, who's saying, hey, you Russians can come to Los Angeles and help us make this place secure. I called the Soviet Union TASS agency in Washington, D.C., and asked the head of TASS in Washington if the decision to come to the Olympic Games had anything to do with J. Paul, Western Goals, Larry McDonald, and then linking to the Korean Airline Committee in Los Angeles. And I wrote the name of the gentleman. I'll put it on the air next week. I forgot to bring it. Do you know what he told me? He didn't know what Western Goals was. TASS, the Soviet Union newspaper, felt there would be terrorism in Los Angeles and never heard of Western Goals. And I thought, how could this be? But do you know this story, and I've reminded you over and over again, never made the wire services except once. The front page of the Washington Post, I believe it was August the 18th, mentioned Representative Larry McDonald of the John Birch Society and Western Goals and the links of his computer that he bought that tapped with John Reese and J. Paul to the illegal compilation of police files. And within 2 weeks, Larry McDonald was dead. The board of Western Goals was never mentioned. And TASS, I said, I will, next week, I was busy this week, take the sheets from the broadcast I've had and the tapes and send them to you. You've never heard of Larry McDonald and the LAPD, and you feel insecure about Los Angeles. When I send you these, maybe you'll feel a little more secure. I don't think he was lying to me. He said he didn't know about it. Now, there was a biography of J. Paul in the newspaper When a story is over, when he's released, when he gets his money, when he's back on the police force, probably by tonight, then they do a biography. And Joel Sapel from the Los Angeles Times, who I telephoned many times when the trials were going on, had a page and a half story, April the 30th, 1984, on J. Paul. And we only have 7 minutes. I wanted to give you the whole story because most of you don't get the Los Angeles Times. And again, no Associated Press, no Wire Press, not picked up. He described J. Paul as alone in the center of a sensational scandal. Well, Nixon was the center of Watergate. Hitler was the center of World War II. Western Goals was ignored, and J. Paul was the center. We have a way of centering a person, and he can't do it alone, she can't do it alone, and making them the only person. And then on top of that, he's not only the center, but he's given all his money and the total approval of the Los Angeles Police Department. Now, they described his background, the family that moved from Brooklyn. I'll do more later. He went to a military academy in Los Angeles where he was the only Jew. Familiar? Bernard Weissman, the only Jew with the Nazis that came from Munich, Germany, that worked with Robert Morris and H.L. Hunt. Jack Ruby, the Jew that killed Lee Harvey Oswald, silenced him. He said, the world will know who I am on Friday, and on Sunday there's a corpse. Okay? Jack Ruby worked with H.L. Hunt, the anti-Semites, the John Birch Society, the group that Larry McDonald's to take over, Connie Trammell, Larry Schmidt, Bernard Weissman, and the whole gang. He didn't know Weissman. Jack Ruby didn't know Weissman. They were the only Jews. And Ruby was looking to see why Weissman's name was on the billboard, wanted for treason. And they used those Jews, Rubenstein and Weissman, to link the murder of John Kennedy to the Jews. And then you'd think, well, all Jews are communists, and you'd go to that point. Roy Cohn, the Jew on Western Goals, with the pilot of the Luftwaffe, with the Mr. Wigner of the Galen Organization, with Admiral Moore, the chief of staff for Singlaub, with the Nazis. Jew Cohn, okay? J. Paul, the Jew, the police department. They take a Jew and put him among the Nazis, the anti-Semites, the Birch Society, and they take these mentally deformed people who live vicariously. It's a sort of fratricide of killing their own people and live vicariously of being with the in-group. And when in comes down, we line up these Jews like Bernard Weissman, Jack Ruby, and J. Paul, and Roy Cohn. What a disgrace. But I'm sure there's a lot of people that are nice. There are Jews that may say, no, thank you, I don't want the job. But the role of American history is woven with people that are cop-outs and sellouts. I'm not just anti-Vatican mafia connections or anti-Mormon data bank connections. I cover the spectrum of where the chips fall and these guys are disgraced. And two little stories about J. Paul that I want to get into this broadcast. J. Paul worked for the police department. He was going to Japan, and he had some reason to think he would be killed in Japan. They don't go why. So what he does, it's a commercial airline, and they set a personal trip. It's not a military plane. He calls the airline and gets the passenger list of everybody on his flight, and he goes through each name and puts it into his computers and the Los Angeles Police Intelligence and finds that two members of the Communist Party are on the plane, and then he says he thought he would be killed because two communists were on it. Now, this was quite a few years back, and J. Paul is the household word, and his work with anti-communists or Birch Society wasn't in the open. But listen to this. Commercial airlines give passenger lists to people from the police department. Remember, I told you I stopped lecturing at colleges because things happened to me on 6 consecutive airplanes, luggage, hotel rooms, doors that didn't close on planes, and so forth. And you think you're paranoid. They give lists of people on airlines. E. Howard Hunt on the airline coming up here once from L.A., you know, that I recognized, and he was on the plane coming up here. Coincidental? Maybe. They know, then they know, oh, so-and-so's on this plane. He's arriving in this town. A cab can follow them. Where do they go? Two members of the Communist Party on his plane? The point is that he thought he would be killed because two communists were on his plane. Now, think of him working with Larry McDonald, who became a martyr at the hands of the communists like J. Paul thought he was going to be. The head of Western Goals and the military, where McDonald is the buffoon front for the real high joint chief of staff, the computers that work with the police intelligence, the police Gestapo in L.A., Larry McDonald is sent to South Korea and is martyred for the anti-Soviet demonstrations, and they're referred to as beasts. All the evidence has come out that the United States knew what they were doing, and there's a lawsuit now. I just saw an article about the prosecution against the United States government because they had the communications and could have warned. And the defense of the government for the people whose family were killed on the Korean Airlines, it was in the paper last week, is that the government does not have to tell you if the plane is in danger. So they knew Congressman Larry McDonald was going down, just like Leslie Howard went down, and they didn't want to break the code of British intelligence. The Japanese intelligence, the Korean intelligence, the American, martyred him. Now, he was martyred by the communists exactly like J. Paul thought he was going to be. And it's very revealing, his explanations and his methods and what they do. Because remember, Larry McDonald didn't go out with his secretary, with his members of Congress, with his staff, his liaison. Goodness knows, as I wrote in the article I wrote for Larry Flynn and the Hustler, he went alone. This guy must have had B.O. or must have been suspicious of something that nobody with his whole party in South Korea wanted to travel with Larry McDonald. But here is the mentality of J. Paul, and it worked with McDonald. And one other item in here, because we just have 2 minutes, and I'll do more about this. He tells about an ordinary day. This article tells an ordinary day in the life of J. Paul. This is what it is, a typical day. This is from the Los Angeles Times, April the 30th. A typical day on any given day, Paul says he would drop by the federal building for a chat with the Central Intelligence Agency. He would then grab lunch with a lawyer from the B'nai B'rith Anti-Defamation League. Then he would stop by the Rand Corporation. The Rand Corporation is being quoted every day by Mr. Jenkins on the terrorism of the Olympics and the terrorism to come. And then he'd have dinner with a friend from the John Birch Society. Think of the power of H.L. Hunt and the John Birch Society, what they did in Dallas, how Robert Morris and the Americans for Freedom and Ronald Reagan, all part of the John Birch Society. That was a typical day. Oh, hi, here comes Paul back from New Orleans.
Yes, yes.
How was the jazz? Good?
It was excellent.
Okay, well, Paul is here. My time is up. I will do a lot more on that story of J. Paul, the CIA, the Rand Corporation, the Anti-Terrorist Division. It's a biography when the case allegedly was over. But after he wrote that story, then there's the lawsuit of the Civil Liberties Union against Western Goals. So we go into Act 3 of that story, and it's juicing up. The story isn't over yet, and it will evolve and evolve. And in the meanwhile, the top officials from the Reagan administration who were sexing with Vicky Morgan a month before she was killed will probably surface. So there'll be a lot of interesting things in the news in the weeks and years to come. And in the meantime, this is Mae Bressel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. Was it fun?
Oh, I had a great time.
You did?
I really did, yeah.
Did your suntan? Was it warm or
something? Oh, gosh, it was hot.
The bayou?